This piece was brought to you by Roberta's, robertaspizza.com.
This week on Meat and Three, we're getting semantic to understand the deeper meaning behind some of the foods we love. First, we'll look at the big debate happening around the word milk.
Who the hell are you to tell me what is the name of my product and my landscape and everything we've cared about when, you know, you don't have anything invested in except to put out a little money to buy it? It's our entire life.
Then we get the lowdown on the language of cider.
So the first thing that's really confusing about dryness is that it has nothing to do with how something actually feels in your mouth.
And finally, we get our fill of tiki talk.
You don't walk into a tiki bar and be like, oh yeah, this is what Polynesia is probably like. Like, it's supposed to be like fantasy and stuff. That's the hard part. It's so easy to do tiki bad, and that's where it gets a bad name.
Tune into this week's episode of Meat and Three. That's M-E-A-T plus sign T-H-R-E-E. Available wherever you listen to podcasts.
All right, everybody, welcome to the show, Life's a Banquet. The show that's edible, spreadable, and Zara,
horrible!
Starring your hosts, me, Brenton Scott, and
me, Zara Tangora.
A show about chocolate and wine and bread, champagne and scandal and crackers in bed. I'm drunk!
Always.
Life's a banquet, life's a banquet, life's a banquet, life's a banquet!
Want another?
Consider it done.
Welcome to Life's Banquet, the show about the highs and lows of all things edible, spreadable, and Breton.
Hold on. Horrible. That was a sip of tequila.
With your host, Breton Scott, and
Zara Tangora.
Cheers, Breton. We're drinking tequila.
Yes. Today was a mostly sober day until right now. But there's a new movement, folks. I'm starting it right here on Life's Banquet podcast. Here again.
Yes.
Repeated on Heritage Radio Network here in the heart of Brooklyn. And everybody does this. Okay. I've noticed the trends. I'm sure you've all paid attention. We're talking about food and beverage in case you haven't figured that out by episode. What are we at?
Like 300 or 400.
Episode 4,476.2. Anyway, everybody is doing these extremes, right? I'm noticing this is like Food Trend Watch 2019. And in America, we like to say like, oh my God, Whole 30.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not drinking for 30 days, sober October or this. And I'll never forget the last time that I gave up alcohol. Which was
when was that, about 7 years ago?
When I was 4 years old. And, no, it was a few years back, and I had rented my room to an Airbnb guest, and he was French, and he was living in Montreal, and he came, and he said, I don't understand these Americans. He's like, you go and you do these extremes, because have a glass of wine. Don't have 70 glasses of wine. Just relax. And I'm
right.
Like, you're absolutely right. And there I poured myself a glass of wine, had 14, and got blackout drunk.
So you're saying what I'm doing right now in the studio, this is my third Reese's mini egg that I'm about to eat.
You're stress eating. So folks,
extreme.
What we're talking about is trends, the keto trend, right? And so I'm starting a movement called Mostly Sober and Conscious Eating, right? So just have a slice of pizza, because what I thought about, and I am the king of trends and phases, and let you know, like Breton's healthy lifestyle number 47, and I freak out for 2 months. I get really skinny, and then I freak out, and then I do the opposite.
Yeah.
So I've learned at this ripe age. If you want to hear about it, you can email us at lifesabanquetshow@gmail.com, and we'll tell you all about it.
Yeah, I'm doing this new diet where every single thing I eat is just plain butter.
Perfect. Oh, that's very keto.
But I only eat it for 1 hour a day. So 1 hour a day, I eat like 7 or 8 sticks of butter plain, but also I eat it up my butt. I take it rectally.
Oh, okay. So rectal intermittent fasting. It's a new trend.
Exactly.
Brooklyn is, there's a lot going on. Tell me about your week. How is it? Tell me what you cooked and drank and ate, and et cetera, et cetera.
Well, that's an interesting question. I've been very busy with work. So most of my cooking has been in
recipe testing. You're still going strong with that.
Going strong. Haven't really cooked much at home. Today I went to the farmer's market and saw the first little signs of life popping up.
Oh my God.
So that's exciting.
Like a ramp sprout.
Yes. A picture of a... Someone drew a picture of a ramp and
fetal
it was there.
Fetal ramps. Everybody get your fetal ramp pasta. It's delicious. That's actually not...
No, cool. But there's some nice greens and...
greens are common.
I bought some burpless cucumbers, which... What the fuck is that, by the way? What's a burp? Does cucumbers normally make you burp?
Well, no. They have the burps, like the little spikes on the outside.
Those are called burps.
Those are called burps.
Got it. And so these ones are just grown without burps, or someone removes the burps one by one?
They're hand removed upon when they're very young and tender. We just shave them off. They never knew what happened to them.
What do they do with the burps? Do they get like sold somewhere? Or are we repurposing them for like dog food
they
or something?
Yes, they are recycled as rabbit food. You haven't heard about this? That's very strange.
I haven't. So I haven't really been doing much eating or drinking. Yesterday, I did stop by Henry Public after I went to go see the Aretha Franklin movie, which highly recommend. It's a footage of this like amazing concert she did in the early 70s, this gospel concert. I was pouring tears the entire time.
I must see it.
The music moved me. But after I went there, I went to Henry Public and I had a whiskey sour.
It's getting to be that time of year again.
Perfect spring drink.
Do they use egg white in their sour mix?
They do. And yes. I have to tell you, I like egg white in a drink. I like what it does for it, but there's something about the smell that actually kind of turns me off.
When you put, folks, if your children are listening, that's okay. It's a part of human nature. But okay, so if in a traditional sour mix, not the kind you go to the liquor store and you buy in that weird... What container does it even come in?
I don't know, but I just thought this tequila was water.
Yeah, it happens. It could be.
The sour mix and like a green, yeah.
Some kind of container. Anyway, sour mix is usually composed of usually all the citruses, right? Lime, lemon, and orange are often just lemon and lime. I think that varies.
Yeah.
But then a traditional sour mix would have egg white, which you shake, and that is sort of what gives it a beautiful, frothy texture, right?
Mm-hmm. But it smells like cum.
Yeah, I mean, and some people are into that. A lot of people are into that. And
what did you cook and drink? Any cum?
No, I. You know what? I did a lot of. I had to cater a party.
How'd it go? I didn't even talk to you about that. How'd it go?
Yeah, it was really great. I made a really beautiful vegetable platter. I used your. Okay, hold on. We have a little secret recipe right now. Interject recipe break. Burnt onion, French onion dip.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not. It's actually onion dip a la Tangora. And Zara, so I was freaking out. I was like, oh my God, I have to have some dips. I need something interesting. And I was just going to make my regular French onion dip. And Zara says, hold on, I have the secret ingredient. She takes very thinly sliced onions, mm-hmm. yellow onions, right?
Yep.
And you fry them to a brown crisp.
Yes.
Right before they're burnt.
Yes. Just shy of trash.
Yeah, just shy of trash. Anyway, so you make the standard French onion dip. And if you haven't done this before, it's really easy. I use whole milk yogurt, a little bit of sour cream, and some good old-fashioned Hellman's mayonnaise.
Hell
the best,
yeah.
Right?
That's exactly what I do.
You mix it in. I used onion. It's really simple. Onion powder, and then you put those crispy onions in, and you got to let it sit. And you let it sit overnight, and it turns the most gorgeous caramel mocha brown the next day.
Oh, I'm so glad you liked it.
It was a hit.
It's mad good.
I have almost 3 cups of it left. People really didn't... They ate enough of it.
Yeah.
But there was still, it's very thick.
Yes.
And I've been dipping carrots, raw peppers, cucumbers. A vegetable platter is really good with that dip.
It is really good.
So is your finger.
I have that dip on a menu that I'm doing right now, and it's just chips and dip. So if the time is right, I'll tell you guys
where you can get it. So, folks, as your spring parties start happening, keep that recipe in the back of your... It's just one notch, and it's really not hard. It's so much better than going to the grocery store and buying, classic or the generic French onion dip.
Yeah. And you can make like those onions that I gave you had been sitting on my shelf for like 3 months. Like they're shelf stable. So you can just do a bunch at one time.
Exactly. I used the freezer technique. So I made some stuff. I copied Zara.
Aww.
Classic cater. After we've catered for a while, you kind of know the best hits.
You know what works.
Stuffed grape leaves, which are, once you make a bunch of them, they're pretty easy. You can throw them in the freezer. Little strudels, classic, right?
Awesome.
I cut them thin.
You did?
Cut them thin. Huh. It was great, but I was like, oh, maybe they're a little too thin. Zara and I used to have an argument where when we would cater, I would cut her little strudels. Like, they were little round things, and you cut them and bake them. She's like, don't cut them thin. I was like, and I would do it anyway, just because I was like, I want them thin.
Yeah.
But they do cook better when they're thick.
They cut, it should be a two-biter.
Two-biter, yeah. Anyway, so that was good. Catered.
Great.
I did some food styling for a prominent magazine, Children's
Ooh.
Food. We made an ice cream sandwich cake.
Oh.
Out of commercial. And also, just so you know, I had to test how, only because when you do a photo shoot, when you're doing frozen goods, you have very limited time. Like, you got to set mm-hmm. everything up and you have to be like, okay, it's starting to melt the moment you take it out.
Yeah.
A commercial ice cream sandwich after 27 minutes and 30 seconds was still completely...
Really?
It was just sitting there like normal.
That's weird. It did get soft. I saw that on your Instagram.
I was confused, but also delighted.
It's like one of those foods, like a Twinkie, would be there like after the blast, because it's really not ice cream. It's just like frozen fluff. It's like a marshmallow.
Frozen fluff, marshmallow, exactly.
You know, that actually kind of reminds me of something opposite of what our topic is about today, but also kind of the same. So today we're near, it's spring, their blossoms are blossoming.
The blossoms are with chlorophylls in the air. People are singing songs of love.
Everyone's sneezing, coughing.
Yeah. People are like, oh, I got sick again.
It's the second coming of Christ is upon us. And you know, that means people, eggs.
That's right. I can't think of a more natural transition to talking about eggs.
Eggs are a sign of rebirth, though. True. And the fertility.
Spring. They don't call it a spring chicken for nothing.
That's true. Or right? A spring rabbit.
Spring rabbit, spring lamb, spring chicken. You name it. Passover, Easter, Hanukkah, whatever you want. Spring is here.
Hanukkah is in the winter.
Perfect. Love it. Well, it just happened.
Jews,
I feel like
remember what I told you last week. Breton is not a friend of yours.
I told this Jewish woman, I was like, oh, well, you know, I said I'd learned how to make a proper Hanukkah. I mean, Passover meal last year. We made a Passover meal.
Yeah, that was fun. That's always a good one. So eggs, Breton, what do you have about eggs?
Well, okay. Let me tell a little story.
Please.
A few years back, I was obsessed with, well, actually not many years back, I was obsessed with Martha Stewart and her chickens.
Oh,
which,
yes.
I may or may not have seen, I don't know if this is public knowledge, but, I have pictures of them.
I may or may not have seen them also.
But I always wanted different colored eggs. And I don't mean the Easter egg kind, I mean the kind that the chickens actually hatch. Or lay rather. And so some of these chicks are, you know, Araucanas, Americanas. There's these different varieties. And honestly, the egg's the same. It's just the shell is different.
Interesting.
It's just due to the variety. Like brown eggs, white eggs, it's the same. People think brown eggs are healthier sometimes.
Right.
They're not. It's just the breed.
Oh, that's interesting, because I will say that I actually think that too. I'm like, ugh, a white egg. I think white bread.
Well, exactly. I had my favorite chicken, whose name was Annabelle.
Annabelle?
Annabelle, she was a Colombian, I think a Colombian Wyandotte, I think is how it's pronounced. Anyway, she was gorgeous and she was white and black and had like a nice red beak. Classic. Sweet as honey. Seriously, sweet. She loved to be held, loved to be snuggled with. She's still alive.
Oh,
anyway,
good.
I got her years ago when I was in Denver, and she laid a really nice classic white egg with a wonderful yolk. That being said, eggs, we all have them. I mean, women are carrying them as we speak.
Testicles are eggs, too. Is that correct?
Pretty much.
It's an egg shape, at the very least.
Different episode, but you're right. Foreshadow. Not to be confused with foreskin. So eggs. There's all kinds of things. You know that a chicken egg has approximately 6 grams of protein?
No.
So if you make a nice 4-egg omelet... Also, hold on. I'm going to stop you right here. Anybody that's listening right now that orders an egg white omelet, go ahead.
Turn this
go
podcast
ahead,
off.
Go ahead, slap me. Damned be to you. It is the whole egg, and it is not going to give you high cholesterol. It is actually, much of the protein is also in the yolk and the nutrition. It's where the episode, it's the nucleus. It's
of course.
It has all the nutrition, so just don't separate your egg yolks unless you're doing it to make meringue and then ice cream with your yolks.
Of course. To me, someone who orders an egg white omelet is basically like ordering a grilled cheese without the cheese. And you just want bread. So you just want bread.
When I worked in the Hamptons last summer, when I was a private chef, of course, you know, think the Hamptons. I'm not going to diss because I'm giving up, you know, complaining. But I was so surprised
just
that
give it up tomorrow.
They were trying to be thin and everybody had, you know, like, oh, can I have a 7 egg white omelet? And there's all these cookbooks and nutritionists out there. And you know what? Shame on you. Breton Scott on Life's a Banquet Network is telling you to shame yourselves right now. And I don't care. I'm very upset about this because the chickens deserve better.
Absolutely. Also, 7 egg whites is an obscene amount of protein.
Your body deserves better.
Fuck off.
So anyway, did you know that you can eat all different kinds of eggs? You can eat pheasant eggs. You can eat turkey eggs. You can eat duck eggs. I love a duck egg.
You love turkey eggs, though, too.
Turkey eggs are just about... Check at your local farmer's market. If you're in New York City, there's a farm called Quattro Farms.
Mm-hmm.
And they have wonderful turkey eggs that are coming right now.
They're delicious, those
and
turkey eggs.
I also wanted to mention, I know I'm kind of rambling on about eggs, but there's another
That's
woman...
okay.
Another woman... in New York City, well, she's actually in near Greenport in the North Fork.
Uh-huh.
And she has a farm called Feisty Acres Farm.
Ooh.
And I'm going to be going there in May to do a little interview with her.
Really?
Well, I don't know if it's... we have to confirm a date, but I don't know if it's going to be filmed or just radio, or maybe I'll just go there and see what it's about.
Okay.
But she... Her name is Abra. And her name is Abra Morawiec.
Mm-hmm.
Morawiec. I don't know. It's Polish, so go figure.
Sure.
Anyway, she started a farm a few years ago with her boyfriend, and she raises guinea fowl, and she has tons of quail eggs, and she's...
That's awesome.
Just this kind of young, like, kind of trend-setting poultry farmer. And I was like, oh, well, you know, she went to college, and she's like, you know what? I want to be a farmer instead.
Yeah.
She did... I don't know. She did something else before this, but
that's amazing.
She was in the Peace Corps. Anyway, so don't just think that chicken egg is the only egg you can eat or make.
Could you eat an eagle's egg?
Bald eagle's egg specialty.
Trending.
Yeah, trending at the White Horse.
How here we are, Roberta's Pizza, the coolest restaurant in all of Brooklyn, and I see someone right in front of us right now eating a bald eagle egg omelet.
Mmm, delicious. So,
what kind of egg did you just eat?
I just had a chocolate peanut butter egg.
I mean.
So as we're coming up on Easter, we're all going to be cooking, and Passover as well. Passover, do you guys do... Do you chosen people? Do you chosen ones?
What do you mean by you guys? Go on.
Now,
choose your words wisely.
I'm on air. what I meant was, does the Jewish culinary tradition do any kind of brunch for Passover, or is it strictly the dinner?
No, it's. I believe there's a fast before.
A fast, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So, I love how Christians...
Or maybe that's Rosh Hashanah. You know what? I'm not really very religious, to be honest with you. I'm just saying it for the latkes and the masa ball soup.
Yeah, yeah.
And the brisket.
Exactly.
Of course, the stuffed cabbage, the crepe lock, whatever.
So as we're all getting ready, and if you're not Jewish or Catholic or any religion, you can still celebrate the wonderful food of Easter,
Absolutely.
Which is delicious.
Yeah.
And, you know, you get your poached eggs. We've got our, you know, Eggs Benedict and lots of quiches.
And peeps.
So, before Zara starts her story, I'm going to just tell you a very quick and easy, in case you're in a pinch and you have to go to somebody's Easter party, which I'm invited to one and I have to frantically come up with an idea, bring a quiche.
Mm-hmm.
And start now. Start now while you're listening to this. Get a pie crust. You can even use puff pastry.
Yes, I love puff pastry.
Puff pastry is great. You can buy a frozen one. Dufour, D-U-F-O-U-R, is a wonderful brand. And you can just thaw that out or make your puff pastry or you make your pie crust. Put it in the freezer right now. You know what? Email me. I'll make one for you. Give me $20. Give me $492 and it's yours.
Breton's quiche train.
And then you can even freeze and par-bake your thing. So when the morning comes, you whip up an egg mixture. And I used to freak out. I was like, oh my God, is it 5 eggs to 2 cups milk? Is it? It varies. I mean, the thing is, if you want a thicker, kind of more dense quiche, you would use more eggs.
Mm.
If you used 12 eggs and 1 cup of milk, it's still going to turn out.
Yeah.
You just have to use enough eggs, which I would say the minimum is 5 or 6, right?
I mean, for a full-on quiche, you need a dozen eggs, really.
I use 6, actually.
Oh, really?
For a lovely...
For what size quiche?
Those big, thick ones I make, like a 10-inch...
6 eggs?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
It's really custardy.
Jeez, wow.
But you have to make sure it's thoroughly cooked. So just remember, when you're making an egg quiche dish, you could even, like, put it in a sheet pan. You could put it in a 9x11 glass dish. There's no rules... And it's supposed to be kind of this rustic thing, and you can throw whatever you want. Smoked salmon, dill, parsley, onions.
An old shoe.
Caramel, yes, an old shoe, shoelaces, peanut butter eggs.
A toothbrush, a pizza, another quiche that you found. Just put it in the other quiche. Actually, I did that recently. We were making a tortilla espanol. The tortilla that I was making like wasn't working out, so I made more. I put it in another tortilla.
Mm-hmm.
It had to be bigger. That was the problem, actually. So I made like more tortillas, set the one I already had inside it, and baked the whole thing together.
And it turned out beautifully.
Exactly. That's the beauty of eggs. All right, guys, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, some more excellent content.
Mm-hmm. I'm ecstatic.
Oh. Are you enjoying this podcast? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. My name is Diane Stemple.
And I'm Elena Santigade, and we're the hosts of Cutting the Curd here on Heritage Radio Network. Featuring interviews with makers and mongers and everybody in between, this show is a downright funky look at the world of artisan cheese.
You can find Cutting the Curd wherever you listen to podcasts and on heritageradionetwork.org.
My name is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, a super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
Oh my God, did you know, Zara, that an egg has all of the 9 essential amino acids? Which
no,
are
I don't even know what an amino acid is.
Well, they help you build muscle when you're pumping iron.
Oh,
how's that
I
sound?
Know about that because I am full of iron.
Exactly. Now I want to hear what's going on with your egg story.
Okay, well, first I'm going to start with a joke because that seems to be something I'm getting into doing. It's
natural born comedian over
it's
here.
It's my thing. Mm-hmm. I'm practicing to be a famous stand-up. So, Breton, why can't you tease an egg?
I don't know. Why not?
Because it can't take a yolk. That's a bad one. But I have to tell you, there was no good egg jokes on the internet. So that's the best I could do. So today I want to kind of talk to you about some famous eggs. And I'm going to focus on one of the most famous eggs of all time. But first, I'm just going to tap into, or should we say crack into, a couple other famous eggs in history. Just briefly.
I'm so excited. Is one going to be the famous painted Ukrainian eggs?
That's actually on part 2, have to subscribe to. It costs $10,000 an episode. So one of the most famous eggs, and this one is near and dear to my heart because I was this in a school play of Alice in Wonderland in the 6th grade. My mom made me my costume.
A wonderful age. Coming of age.
I think it really scarred me for life and made me feel like a complete idiot throughout my young years. But anyway, Humpty Dumpty.
I know your therapist told me that.
They should not have young girls play Humpty Dumpty. I'm sorry. Like, I was also like slightly chubby and they're like, you could be Humpty Dumpty, you ding dong. I mean...
But I want to be cast as the beautiful princess that comes. Like, how about Humpty Dumpty?
I want to be Alice. No, I think you're more of a Humpty Dumpty, really. Yeah. my mom made
me a costume. Hey, listen, pay us $50. Yeah, sure.
My mom made me a costume out of hula hoops and a trash bag.
That's where you get it from.
So as we all know, the rhyme, Humpty Dumpty sat on a wall. Humpty Dumpty had a good fall. All the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't put Humpty together again. And I always kind of wondered what that was about. And I was actually going to do my story on Humpty Dumpty. And I realized that it wasn't as profound or prolific as I thought it was.
Mm-hmm, as most things in life are.
Right. Humpty Dumpty really was like a mean way of referring to a round, kind of fat, ugly British person back in the day. And then it appeared in Alice Through the Looking Glass. And then really it was meant to symbolize a cannon in the mid-1600s in Clochester. So they called Humpty Dumpty a cannon. I was like, we can't do the story about that. Then I was like, you know what? I'm also interested in why in I'm the Walrus, who is the Eggman in the famous Beatles song?
Suddenly I'm obsessed.
Who
was it?
So in Lewis Carroll's Through the Looking Glass, John Lennon, he was said to be one of his favorite books in his youth. He was obsessed with the Walrus and the Carpenter story, and then he was obsessed with the Eggman that was in there, who was referring to Humpty Dumpty, coming back to our original piece. And so a lot of people thought that was the Eggman. It was meant to exemplify Humpty Dumpty. However, mm-hmm. The real Eggman was actually singer Eric Burdon. Do you know Eric Burdon?
I do not.
He was a popular singer in the 1970s. But anyway, so
do we know, is there a famous song that we can?
Yeah, spill the wine, get that girl. Spill the wine, get
yeah.
That girl.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Oh my God,
it's a really famous song. So anyway,
love it. My favorite.
Apparently, he was called the Eggman because, quote, he was dating a Jamaican woman at one point. She slid up beside me and slipped amyl nitrate capsule under his nose as the fumes began to set his brain alight. And he slid onto the kitchen floor.
Sorry, everybody, just so you know, in street terms, those are called poppers.
Exactly.
AKA VHS cleaner. And if you don't know what poppers are, it's what gay men use before they have an orgasm.
Right. So anyway, that's what this woman did to him, to Eric Burdon.
Or straight people.
She reached around the counter, grabbed an egg, which she cracked into the pit of his belly. And then they had sex. And so he tells this to John Lennon. Long story short, he says, I shared the story with John at a party at a Mayfair flat one night with a handful of blondes and a little Asian girl. And then John Lennon goes, go get him, Eggman.
By the way, this was before the Me Too movement.
Exactly.
But also, you know what? They might have had fun. And that's pretty, I have to say, I've done some wacky stuff. I've never had a cracked egg in my belly button while on poppers.
While on poppers, while having sex.
In an orgy.
But Eric Burdon has, and John Lennon really liked it. And that's why the Eggman exists in the song, I Am the Walrus.
He's like, I'm still living off the royalties.
So the Easter egg itself, which I was also interested in, has pagan roots. Before Christians celebrated the resurrection of Jesus, some argue that the ancient pagans in Europe observed the spring equinox as the return of the sun god, which is also kind of ties back to the Beatles.
Yeah.
It's all connected.
Whoa. The Beatles, they are more profound than we thought.
The Beatles are bigger than Jesus and bigger than wrestling and bigger than the Beatles and bigger than breast implants. Okay, so anyway, but the spring equinox is always supposed to be about a rebirth of light and emergence from the light, from the winter into the light. So people started dyeing Easter eggs, the Christians, red to symbolize the blood of Jesus.
You're right.
And that's where that kind of took off.
So this year, skip the pastels.
Go for red.
I'm sorry, Martha Stewart, you and your natural dyed eggs. Like, oh, onion skins for brown, blueberries for blue. No.
Cattle blood for Jesus and his sacrifices.
Get yourself a quart of pig's blood.
So the most interesting famous egg, though, I think, and the most glamorous egg, and the egg that I think exemplifies opulence and all things that we talk about on the show, highs, lows, murder, tragedy, fame, fortune, is Fabergé. Now, I'm going to give you what?
Just absolutely.
the sinister creep.
Just a quick side note, but does anyone remember in, I believe it was Risky Business, starring Tom Cruise?
Yeah.
Where at the very end, if you've ever seen the movie, well, I don't want to give away the movie, but I will right now. Spoiler.
It's been out for like 40 years. It's okay.
If you haven't seen it by now, I just rewatched it 2 weeks ago. But she steals the Fabergé egg, and it was his mom's prized possession. So they had to find a way to bring it back, and it was all about the Fabergé egg.
Exactly. And there's also a Fabergé egg reference in my favorite movie ever, Serial Mom, but that's a Franklin Mint Fabergé. So today I'm going to talk about the history of real Fabergé eggs and, more importantly, the imperial Fabergé eggs, which were originally created for... Are you familiar with the Romanovs?
The television show?
No, that's the Romanovs.
Oh.
The Romanovs were an imperial Russian family that ruled in Russia for like hundreds of years. So the Romanov family... I can't get into the whole history of it right now, but basically... Tsar Nicholas's father was the first one to get a Fabergé egg for his wife. And then when he died, Tsar Nicholas took over. Now, Tsar Nicholas was also...
Was this his Rasputin?
Rasputin was involved with the family, too, because Tsar Nicholas's son was a hemophiliac. And Rasputin came to help the family initially, and he allegedly cured him of his hemophilia. And then eventually, when he died, he got his... His magic penis cut off, and it's in a jar somewhere. But anyway, on one tragic night, on July 16th in 1918, the entire Romanov family at the time, Tsar Nicholas, his wife, Tsarina Alexandra, and their five children were all brutally murdered.
Yes, I do recall this story.
Now, the Fabergé, Peter Carl Fabergé, had started creating Fabergé eggs for the Romanov family.
For the family.
Exactly.
We must have the most glamorous.
Exactly. Well, actually, 100 years before, in like 1885. So not quite 100 years before, about 50 years before. Mm-hmm. He started creating these gorgeous, beautiful Fabergé eggs, and he created about 50 of them.
What can I ask? Maybe this is not a smart question, but what are they made out of?
They're made out of different materials, like glass and different kinds. Okay. Yeah, gold.
Maybe some type of stone or something. I don't know.
Probably. They're very intricate. I mean, so really, they say somewhere between 50 and 54 imperial Fabergé eggs.
Oh, my God.
So
I would love to get my...
I know. I mean, they're
all...
I would
love to make an omelet out of one of those.
They're all in Russia, except one was somehow at a treasure, like at a thrift sale. And
oh, my God, I want to...
Some podunk place, and this guy bought it for like $20 and it's worth $7 million. And there's still they wouldn't release who it was. And this was like several years ago. But
was he on the show, on the PBS show?
I don't know, but he's a lucky guy. So anyway,
Roach, I'd be like, what do you think this Fabergé eggs work? Be like, oh my God, that is
a... That is worth $7 million. That is from the Roman... There's Romanov blood on there. oh, so there was like diamonds in them, emeralds and pearls, all kinds of stuff. So when they were killed on July 16th, 1918, they were taken over by the Bolsheviks. And the Bolsheviks were led by Lenin and then eventually Stalin after that. And so they took over the Romanov rule. They took all of the art and they took...
Followed by Donald Trump.
Exactly. And now Trump has all of the eggs up his butt. So anyway, they took all of, like, all of the Russian art and all of the eggs. And then, oddly, Armand Hammer, who eventually went to go work for Armand Hammer.
This is not... You,
yes.
You can't write this, folks.
He went to go work for Armand Hammer, but his name was Armand Hammer.
So Armand Hammer went to work for...
And he was a capitalist disguising himself as a communist, and he bought up a bunch of the eggs. Isn't that insane?
Now that's a smart...
I know, it's really crazy. But now most of them are back in Russia. A Russian billionaire bought them for, like, I think most of them for like $100 million way above market value, just so they could,
like,
all be...
the Fabergé eggs, please.
He wanted them to all be in Russia. They feel very, like, serious about Russian things being in Russia. But a little bit about Peter Carl Fabergé. He was also, his life was in danger when the Romanovs were taken over by the Bolsheviks because they were so had such a close relationship. So he was exiled, I think, to Switzerland or Sweden. But he had, like, this really amazing company. Two of his chief designers, he was really ahead of his time. Two of his chief designers were women. All of the workmasters, as they were called, were in charge of recruiting and personally training their own teams of artisans. And they were allowed to set their own schedules, which... like, think about this in, like, communist Russia.
Oh, my God. Be like, hey, you know what? I'm kind of a night person.
He started startup culture. There was probably dogs running around the office, too.
Oh, my God. That's our house dog, Zoe. She loves her toy.
Yeah, Fabergé ran the House of Fabergé, an early prototype of industrial democracy, despite living under one of the world's tightest autocracies. And although he was privy to some of the wealthiest circles in Russia... he worked with mostly illiterate people, poor people, and gave them total free rein artistically. And he was just basically a really amazing, kind, wonderful person to work for. And that is the story of the Fabergé egg.
That is a wonderful story, yeah. I have to say.
Yeah, it's kind of an abridged version because to get into it, we'd have to really dig deep into the history of the Romanovs and into communism and into the Bolsheviks.
You can
check
out our series on Netflix. It's coming out.
Actually, I would like to suggest, I don't remember what episode it is, but My Favorite Murder has a great episode about the Romanovs, and it is really fascinating. And I got a lot of my information for this from a podcast called Art History Babes. On their episode they just did on Fabergé eggs, and it's really good. That's a fun podcast, too.
Well, download that immediately.
Yeah, it's really
after
good.
Hours, of course.
Of course. Please, finish listening to all our episodes.
Because we have some... Don't forget our top three in Chef Recommends coming up.
Exactly. We're
right
food history, babes.
Now.
So, for Chef Recommends this week, I want to ask you a question.
Oh, yeah. We haven't discussed this, but I love surprises.
What are some of your favorite ways to use eggs where they're not, like, the main... attraction, where they're very featured but they're not necessarily like a quiche or something like that? Like, how do you like to use eggs most as like a great side player?
Okay, funny you should mention this, because besides the obvious where breakfast, right, eggs or perhaps deviled eggs, like that's a really common thing and all over the internet right now trending, both Food and Wine and Bon Appetit magazine
jammy eggs with mayo
simultaneously, and like every other food blogger simultaneously, mm-hmm. within 4 days of each other, all came out with the same recipe.
I know.
Which was jammy eggs, like, oh, skip the making deviled eggs, just put everything. It's a great idea.
Of course.
Whoever thought of it, or maybe everybody thought of it at the same time, they say that happens. It's a great idea. It's kind of like, just skip the middleman and, like, just put the stuff on it.
The Romans thought of it.
The Romans thought of it first.
Like,
right.
In AD times.
And aka, Zara, you did it at Percy. Let's just get it out there.
By the Romans, I mean me, bitches.
Like, you did it in 2012. You did in 2012. Okay, so besides that, you asked me the question, and I'll answer it right now. One of my favorite kind of fun little things to do with eggs is I take a hard-boiled egg, and on a topping of, say, like a crostini or something,
yeah,
or even, let's say you want to make a little crostini, maybe some avocado, or maybe a little piece of salmon, and I grate the egg. I think they call that egg mimosa.
Yes.
It's an old technique. So a lot of people, there people have been doing it, I've noticed.
That's
a long time
ago. Good thing to do with
I worked at a French Moroccan restaurant in 1998.
Okay.
And the owner was...
Picture it,
1998.
What'd your hair look like?
But the same. I just got bleached. I just got 90s hair again. I was like, it's the same. I've never grown up. Anyway, the owner used to take the egg, you know, hard-boiled egg, and on the very fine part of your cheese grater, not the microplane. Well, you can use the microplane if you'd like, but a very fine grate works the best. And you want to have a really nice, firm, hard-boiled egg. You can grate that. And it's the most delicate, fluffy... melt in your mouth, little topping, and also people kind of don't know what it is. They're like, oh, is that shredded? And you can even take the whites out separately. So I think, right, when we did our blini, or when we did our caviar episode, if you make a caviar plate, I think actually Russians do that. It's very common, where you would grate the egg and the yolk separately, and you can spoon that delicate mixture top of a blini with, you know, or a crostini, for example. So that's one of my favorite.
That's cool.
Kind of like off the beaten path, you know, kind of like shock your neighbors, shock your family on Easter.
Shock all the people who are allergic to eggs and think you're giving them Parmesan cheese.
Is that Parmesan cheese? Go ahead. Oh, you're allergic to albumin? No problem. she's sick.
My favorite is, my favorite thing to do with an egg that it's kind of unexpected is thickening stuff with eggs that you wouldn't think. So
unexpected?
Unexpected.
Oh, yes.
One of the most unexpected
things I know where you're going
like
with
do.
This. I know where you're going with this.
I love particularly an avocado lemono soup.
Yes.
Avocado lemono soup is my favorite
soup. All right,
so
tell everybody and what this is.
Well, it's interesting because you don't see this a lot in soups. You see it in other things. It's basically the method of tempering an egg into something to thicken it.
Just like if you were making a custard,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. Creme anglaise, anything else, except you're applying it in a savory way. I mean, similar
thing. Egg drop soup.
Right, but it's not really an egg drop soup because then an egg drop soup
dropping
is dropping and it's like...
It's different. Piecey. You're right.
But avocado lemono is great. It's a chicken lemon soup. It's with rice. It's a Greek soup, and you thicken it with some eggs that you just temper in. But it has this like amazing creamy, beautiful thing that you would never expect, and it's just from the power of the incredible edible egg.
Well, this reminds me. A long time ago, we did a Fanny Craddock episode.
Oh, yes,
okay, so
we did.
Just to brief, you can go and check in on our feed on Spotify, iTunes, whatever. You can go back. Fanny Craddock was a British celebrity chef from the 1950s, 60s, 70s, and she used to do live shows, live cooking demos with tuxedos and formal, like she did it in the UK. And one of her tricks, she would warm up a sherry or a port and then throw an egg yolk in it or an egg and then whisk it and warm it, and then it would be this beautiful, creamy sherry soup. Which sounds, at first, I was like, that's weird. And I did it. And it's incredible.
Did you put salt in it, though?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Because thinking like unsalted or flavored.
You could do some chicken, you know, same kind of thing. It's
Or
you could make an
avocado lemono.
Avocado lemono. Yes.
I also love hollandaise, of course.
Who doesn't love hollandaise this time of year or any time of year or on top of your biscuit or on top of your...
Oh, Marona. You know what? I made a hollandaise the other day and I had to do it really quick. Mm-hmm. So you know what I did, folks? Everybody makes you think that making a hollandaise is so hard. It seems like the most challenging thing ever to do.
Blender holidays, right?
Blender holidays. Although I didn't even just use a blender. I used, what do you call it?
A stick blender.
No. The magic bullet.
Not to be confused with the magic rabbit.
Exactly. Which is a vibrator, which I also use to make hollandaise.
I accidentally ran to the bedside table, grabbed the magic rabbit.
I stopped massaging my face with it after my hangover, and I put it in the hollandaise. Yeah. Hope you guys all enjoyed that. No, I used the magic bullet, and the thing is, even with blender hollandaise, you know, you're meant to think that you have to drizzle it in really slowly, otherwise you're going to curdle the egg. I just did it quickly. I put a little bit in at a time.
Did you clarify your butter?
No.
Right? So you just... Okay. Folks, here it is.
Perfect.
Really quickly, ready? You take a blender. You take some egg yolks, maybe a touch of lemon juice, right?
Yeah.
Or some vinegar if you don't have that. Improvise. You gotta have some kind of acid. Not that kind of acid.
Yeah. And
not the little smiley face stamp that you put under your child's tongue. No. A different kind. And then you just put melted butter in, and you blend. You make it's butter mayonnaise.
It's butter mayonnaise.
Butter mayonnaise,
and it's delicious.
But the key is you have to keep it warm. That's the only.
Oh yeah,
key.
You have to keep it warm. And I have another tip, actually. If you if you want to make your hollandaise ahead of time, and then you keep it, let's say, in a container, and you put it in a water bath. Sometimes when it comes back up to temperature, it's gonna separate a little bit. All you need to do is put a tiny drizzle of water in there and shake it up, and it comes back together immediately.
How about that? Little tricks in the trade.
Yeah.
Tricks in the trade.
Breton.
Yes.
Can I ask you a question?
Absolutely. Hold on. Let me have my 11th peanut butter egg.
I ate four, but they're small. They're tiny ones.
That's what she said. Okay, go ahead.
I want to know what your top three favorite egg dishes are, where egg is the star.
Okay. Starring eggs, ready, go. Number three, well, I guess I'm going to have to say a quiche.
Yeah.
I know you would think that's number one, but it's so ubiquitous that...
I don't make assumptions about you.
Yeah, yeah.
You're a wild card.
Also, it'll change. It already changed. Sorry, I changed number one. No, kidding. Number three. Strike that, reverse it. Check it, I really won't get it. So, a quiche. Number two is I love an egg. Does this count? Like an eggy custard.
Everything counts.
And by the way, an eggy custard, I mean, there's this Chinese dim sum delicacy. Mm. I don't know the name in Chinese, but it is sometimes it's a salted egg custard.
Mm-hmm.
And they take, and it's like, or it's called flowing sand egg custard.
Perfect.
Is how it translates.
The pronunciation is spot on.
Flowing egg sand custard. And it's this kind of wonderfully textured cooked eggs. It's almost a slightly savory, and they make it inside of a puffed, you know, dumpling, or like a raised dumpling dough. And then it is steamed. And then so when you bite into it, the flowing sand egg yolk, which it has this... It's like sugary salty, right?
Oh my God, that sounds so good.
Yeah, yeah. They've been more popular, I've noticed, around dim sum restaurants in New York City. I'm sure in San Francisco. And if you don't live on the coast, well, I feel bad. but you can, that's why you listen to our podcast. Come visit us. We're here for you. And then finally, number one, I'd be a fool to say that if I just... Like, I know this sounds silly, but I love a soft-boiled egg.
Me
just,
too.
And it's all of its simplicity.
Perfect.
Like... You know, take the egg directly from your chicken's fallopian tubes, and you just take they call it sometimes like a 6-minute egg.
Mm-hmm.
You can either boil it. I steam my eggs because I think the shells come off easier. Hello.
That's a good tip.
But
too.
As you know, yeah, there's a thing. Google it. Look at Sarah Moulton talks about steaming eggs, and you simply put eggs in a steamer basket for 11 minutes for hard-boiled, or 12 minutes, you know, and then 6-7 minutes for soft-boiled.
Yeah.
So I just love an egg, a soft-boiled egg.
I love eggs too.
All right, ready? I'm here to listen.
Okay, let me just get right into this. So my number three is a perfect French omelet.
A perfect French omelet
with some Boursin cheese and some finely minced chives. And a perfect French omelet, everybody, has zero brown on the outside. It's very simple.
You cook it low and slow, as
exactly.
They say.
You kind of scramble it in the pan, and then you fold it over, and it's very melty on the inside with some Boursin cheese. It's absolutely perfect.
Divine.
And delicious. So divine. Number two is probably a Dutch baby.
Dutch baby.
Dutch baby. That's a Bruce Springsteen song.
Come on, Dutch baby. It's a Dutch baby.
We're both doing two different things. I'm doing Springsteen. You're doing Beaker from the Muppets?
No, I was speaking Dutch. Oh. Hello. I have a Dutch...
Oh, are you being a Dutch baby?
I have a Dutch sister.
You have literally a Dutch baby in your family.
Yeah, I have a Dutch baby nephew.
Yeah.
And niece. She's just quiet.
Two Dutch babies.
She's not speaking it. We're not talking.
Oh, okay.
Only because she's actually not talking it. All right, number one.
I love a Dutch baby, either savory or sweet, particularly savory. And it's really good. It's like basically a thick crepe, and you can kind of just like roll it up. It's really great. Number one.
Here we go.
Always and forever and ever and ever and ever. Carbonara.
That's a good one.
Carbonara.
All over the internet in 2018. Pasta with egg yolk, guanciale.
It's the best.
And whatever, and pecorino cheese.
You've been to Rome. You agree. They used to call me Zara Carbonara.
Zara Carbonara, because the egg yolk is the sauce.
Yeah, it's delicious. It's
and
absolutely
pasta water.
Pasta water, pecorino cheese butter, and guanciale. And you can like mix it up and have fun with it. You could use, we used to use bacon sometimes at Brucey. Sometimes I'd throw in a handful of Cabot cloth bound cheddar. But the traditional way to make it, pasta water, bucatini, then you throw in some really finely grated pecorino cheese, top that.
I thought it was spaghetti carbonara.
With an egg yolk, bucatini or spaghetti. Both, actually in Rome, it's bucatini.
You're right.
Which is where carbonara is from.
Great. Well, listen, you've heard your number ones. We're about to leave and steam a bunch of eggs.
We're going to get the hell out of here.
So listen, if you have any questions, again, email us at lifesabanquetshow@gmail.com. Find us on Instagram at lifesabanquetpodcast.
Mm-hmm.
Send us a message. We love hearing all of your thoughts and recipes and comments and concerns and hate mail. We love it.
No, thank you for your emails. I want to read an email next week on the show because we've been getting a lot and I always forget to print one out and bring it in. I just want to mention out there to you, all you guys who are grossed out by the little part that connects the egg yolk and the egg white, I'm with you.
It is disgusting. I save them and eat them.
Brad collects them and collect them makes a dish out of them.
Yeah.
But thank you very much. This was an excellent episode. And if you're looking forward to Jesus coming back, have a great
He'll
time.
Be here soon.
Hell yeah, he's almost here.
Ciao.
Bye. Hasta la pasta.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.